This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, July 14th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk, and a lot to unpack on today's show. Quite the move in markets. We saw the NASDAQ up nearly 1% on the day, and we kind of flip back and forth between what's leading, what's struggling. It's a very interesting market. I'll tell you that much. We are in OPEX week, so there's a lot of kind of short-term funkiness going on in markets. We also had some inflation data come in. We're going to look at this and a lot more throughout the show. And our job here each every weekday is help you become a better investor by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you data and perspective developed over 25 years of investment experience. So don't hesitate to reach out with your question. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics that we'll get to throughout the hour. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. Calling to ask a question in regards to covered calls. I heard one of the podcasts and a caller asked about covered calls, and Justin replied with saying that sometimes it's better to sell closer to in the money covered calls. And I was just wondering why that's the case, if we could get a further explanation on that. Thank you.
Well, just in general, if you're looking for more consistency, you're going to be selling closer to in the money or at the money or near the money options. Doesn't have to be in the money. So let's say stocks sit trading at $50, say $48 per share. You can sell a 45 strike, that'd be in the money, 35 call. You can sell a 50 strike call, that'd be kind of near the money or at the money. Or you could sell like a 55 strike, which would be going further out of the money. You're not going to get nearly as much premium. So when you keep it relatively close to the current price, you're getting decent premium and you're hedging on the downside. So, you know, if you have a 48, you sell a 50 strike, you might get $3 or $4, depending on how far out you go in premium. And that's going to hedge you considerably on the downside. And if things go right, you're still going to make, you know, 10-ish percent plus on your overall position, but it hedges you nicely on the downside. So here's the thing with covered calls. It's never a blanket statement. I say that between sectors, you know, you have to compare companies within sectors. You have to understand the risk of their balance sheet and their business model and the cyclicality of their business model and all that. That goes down to stock selection. But then when you're layering on options trading on top of that, there are so many other factors to consider, because you're going out in time. How much time should you give for that option to potentially expire? If you're buying it, you want more time. If you're selling it, you want less time. Then what strike you should get? What's the current implied volatility? Which means what's the premium that you're either paying if you're buying or getting if you're selling an option. If you're doing a cover call, you're selling an option. And these become infinitely complex. And then you layer on the chart, where's support and resistance? And that is a big factor when it comes to selecting the strike in the near term. And I'd argue that's probably the most important factor if you're selling a cover call. Where is that resistance level? Is it close to resistance or is it a bit of ways away? To me, you want to sell it a strike a little bit below resistance. A little bit below resistance. So you're still getting decent premium, but you're not going to give up too much upside if it does start to test that resistance. That's the way we manage it. This is why, you know, we run our equity income plus strategy, our covered call strategy. Not only can we pick the whole portfolio, what the portfolio looks like, as opposed to just selling covered calls on an index, for example. But we can select different strikes, depending on where we're bullish on the market or a different name or where resistance is. All of these things matter when you're thinking about running a covered call strategy in general. So I hope that helped. But yes, the numbers show you want to be trading closer, those strikes a little bit closer to the current price, as well as not very far into the future, talking 30 to 60 days out max. Now, we had a wonderful show yesterday. We looked into the story behind this headline. Simple portfolio checks could save you from costly mistakes. We looked at all the things that you should be doing now that we hit the halfway mark in the year, a little past that, to rebalance your portfolio, check in on your plan, all of those things to make sure you're hitting your particular goals. We also had a listener question on Micron Technology, MU. And if you happen to miss it, go check it out. The best way to get every show is to follow Invest Talk wherever you get your podcast. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. Here's what I have planned. Our main focus point concerns the story, how to protect your portfolio from inflation's second wave. Oil prices are resurging. The Fed is flagging war-driven inflation risks, and consumers are already feeling pain at the pump. So this is raising fears that a second inflation wave could undo the progress made over the past few years. So is the current macro setup truly comparable to 2022? How is it the same? How is it different? How should investors think about it? We'll dig into that and much, much more. Also, some big changes to the German auto industry because of Chinese automakers. Is this a harbinger of things to come for maybe domestic automakers? We'll look at that. Also, rare earths. The big secret about rare earths, they're not so rare. They're just challenging to get at. We know where they are. It's just expensive to extract. But end demand is going to be very reliant, at least domestically, on industrial execution. Can we rebuild our industrial base? If we can't, then the rare earths won't matter nearly as much. So we'll dig into what that might mean. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll talk about America's first stock bubble. We also have questions in regards to Costco and Arista Networks. And of course, questions that came in via the comment section on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. We're going to head into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime. Leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I'll talk about today's market activity in the next segment.
The numbers are in. Total lifetime downloads for the InvestTalk podcast have now surpassed 63 million. So tell your friends, when they've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
8899-CHART, 8892-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's go take a look at the market today. It was, overall, it was decidedly positive. You had the NASDAQ up nearly 1%, S&P up about 38 basis points. Dow was flat, though. The main weakness was out of healthcare, but strength out of some of the hardware names that had been weak as of late. The big news, though, was IBM. IBM was down about 25%. I've been fairly bearish on IBM for a while, so not shocking here on earnings, poor earnings going forward. Really, they're just a lagger in so many areas that technology is going towards. So not shocking on that front. You did a bit of a sell-off in some of the software names. So you kind of get this ping-pong back and forth where the hardware names sell off due to maybe a little bit more pessimism around AI data center build-out, at least the growth of it. Remember, there's a lot of growth now built in. It needs to be sustained. If it's not sustained, you're suddenly going to see a retrenchment in a lot of these names. And I think that's what the market's trying to figure out now. Is this consolidation period? Will this be sustained at these levels? Or will there be a considerable pullback? Maybe a minor pullback would probably be okay in AI data center CapEx spending, but it's still the Wild West. It's hard to really gauge where that is headed at the moment, and that's why you're seeing this major volatility. You have consumer staples also a bit weaker. surprisingly, because you did have bonds rallying on the fact that CPI came in a bit better than expected. Came in just 2 basis points month over month, core CPI. That was, 0.02%. Consensus was 0.2%. So overall, it's the first monthly, it fell 0.02%. First monthly decline, barely a decline since 2017. But obviously that was after many months of accelerating inflation. And really, it was on the back of oil prices pulling back considerably. But we've seen so far in July, you're seeing oil prices bounce back. So to me, this is kind of a one-off. But cooler inflation did help Fed expectations for rate hikes. Now, the expectation is about 30 basis points of hikes. So maybe one, maybe two hikes between now and year end. Versus before, it was about 40 basis points. You're talking about probably two rate hikes between now and year end. So not shocking on that front. That's why you saw rates fall, treasuries rally. It fell more, though, on the front end of the curve, which is of note. So you got a steepening of the yield curve. Dollar index is down 0.2%. Gold finished up 1.6%. Silver up 2%. Bitcoin up 3.9%. WTI up 1.5% on the day, though off its earlier highs. And really, this is around what's going on in the Middle East. The kinetic warfare looks to be muted for now. But we've seen this kind of tale before of the past 3 or 4 months. Usually, it's quiet during the week, and then you get some escalation over the weekend, and then it calms down by the end of the week. And you know, it's pretty clear that the White House wants to avoid major market disruptions around what's going on in the Middle East. Deutsche Bank says that they don't see really a sustained market reaction unless oil gets back above 110 a barrel, which frankly makes sense. What else? I think that was about it for the day. Remember, we are in the midst of OPEX week, which there's a lot of volatility around that week. And I think you'll get a little bit more clarity around trends in the market once we get through this week and into next week. So that's what I'm expecting. Expect a lot of choppiness throughout the week. Let's go answer a YouTube question. Rock Don says, SPGI seems to be an elite stock, but it's down from 500, partially AI driven. What are your thoughts? Yeah, we actually own S&P Global. We have been buying it back above when it was down, kind of chopping in the high 300s. And now it's at about 438. What's interesting is, even though software, and it has sold off because of part of their business is a software, I think it was I'm trying to remember the markets, one of the names of the software, software name that they bought. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's just called Market now that I think about it. That was a worry that that business would be disrupted because of AI research, but clearly that hasn't happened so far. Earnings are expected to still be up 10% this year, 12% next year to an all-time high of $20.81. They also rate bonds and so many other investment vehicles. They have commodity insights, once again, market data intelligence. They just spun off a piece around the auto industry. So kind of a non-core business. So I think that will focus them a little bit better. But overall, I do think this is a good stock to own and a good buying opportunity after the pullback over the past year or so. Our 24/7 Invest Talk voice bank never closes, so you can leave your finance and investment questions anytime on 888 chart. And our work continues after this break.
Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. Invest Talk.
Let's talk a little bit about the auto industry. Not just here in the US, because it hasn't really impacted us too much. But what's going on in China, or at least the Chinese automakers, is starting to have a large impact across the world. They're pumping out very high quality, very low cost EVs. Talking about companies like BYD, Chery, and other automakers, they topped the European market share at 10% for the first time. So they're encroaching on European auto sales. And that is being felt by all the major European brands, which is going to have a large impact on the German economy. Volkswagen is set to cut about 100,000 jobs over the coming years and end production at four different plants in Germany. BMW recently said they're going to spend about €1 billion in restructuring costs that could lead to about 10,000 jobs or 15%, 10,000 job losses and a 15% reduction in European car production overall. Think about that. And this is after a lot of these automakers have already streamlined their production. So this is forcing German automakers to retrench even more, even with the union pressures. In May, Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, Stellantis, and Renault all lost market share of new cars in Europe. Despite the entire new car market in Europe being up 4% year over year. Because all of that, and then some, went to those Chinese automakers. And this is not just something that is going to be confined to Germany. This is likely to spread around the world. You know, what's insulating us is that we aren't allowing the Chinese automakers here in the US. And even the companies that are doing well, like BMW, being the sole European automaker that increased sales in Europe in May. But they even flagged profits, saying that higher costs are cutting into overall profits, mainly due to downturn in their sales in China, because they're being obviously outcompeted in China. And of course, the impact of the Iran war, right, making input costs go up. So when you're thinking about investing in the auto industry, understand that these dynamics are at play, and it very well could start spreading to other industries as well. But at least in the auto industry, it's a very competitive space, and likely this will impact our domestic producers eventually as well. Let's keep things moving and pivot to the InvestStock Voice Bank. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this call is for Justin or Luke. I had a question regarding stock company Arista, ticker symbol ANET. I've held the stock since March of 2024, and I'm up about 40% on the company. I was just curious your take on the company, and if you think I should continue to hold, or if I should start taking some of my gains and start to look to reinvest those gains elsewhere. Love what you guys do on the show, and I'll be looking forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. Thanks.
Looking at Arista Networks, what they do is they develop, market, and sell cloud networking solutions. Network applications, gigabit Ethernet switches, routing platforms. So a lot of what they make goes into these AI data centers. Profitability, return equity around 31%. Very, very solid. Earnings are expected to rise to an all-time high, around $4.45. Now, it is a $182 stock. So you're talking about a mid-40s multiple. Not cheap. But it's a great business. It's also a business that has net cash in its balance sheet. So can discount that P/E ratio a little bit, but still, it's on the expensive side. Enterprise value to EBITDA, even if you go looking forward, it's about 39, which is on the high end of its range. So this is an area, honestly, I would probably trim it, but I wouldn't be outright selling it because the technicals are fine. The relative strength is good, around 86. Its business is solid. Analysts are upgrading earnings for this year and next year, which is always a good sign. But once again, it's at a high multiple, which means a lot of this positivity is already priced in. Now, that could be sustained, it could be increased, et cetera, and the stock could go higher. That's certainly true. But to me, this is an area you would probably want to rebalance and just reduce your position. Don't sell it. Next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. Retail investors chase shiny objects while ignoring the S&P. New data shows retail investors are piling into speculative assets and individual momentum plays while largely ignoring broad index exposure in the S&P. This is a behavioral pattern that historically signals late cycle risk taking. So we'll explore the psychology behind this trend and why chasing shiny objects almost always ends badly for individual investors. We'll talk about that tomorrow, but give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review. Do you ever think about how two people can be the same age, yet one just seems to have more energy, gets better sleep, and recovers faster? That difference usually has less to do with actual age and more to do with what's happening underneath the surface. That's why I'm excited to share the good news about the True Age test from True Diagnostic. It's an at-home test that looks at markers on your DNA using epigenetics to determine your biological age, not just how many birthdays you've had. Here's what brings the value to the True Age test. It doesn't stop at a single age number. You get your biological age, your pace of aging, and a breakdown of how 11 key organ systems are aging, including your heart, brain, lungs, and liver. You also get 75 plus longevity biomarkers, translated into clear, easy to understand insights around things like metabolic health and immune function. So instead of just getting raw data, you actually get a more complete picture of how your body is functioning day to day. You get personalized recommendations based on your results, things like sleep, nutrition, exercise, supplements, and lifestyle changes. So you have a clear roadmap for improving your health over time. The process itself is very simple. It's just an at-home finger prick. You send it back in the prepaid kit, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you get your full report online. So if you're serious about longevity, or even just curious whether your body is aging faster or slower than your actual age, this is one of the easiest ways to find out. Right now, go to truediagnostic.com and use code INVEST20 for 20% off your entire order. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST20 for 20% off.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go talk to John in St. Louis, Missouri. He wants to talk about RELX, R-E-L-X, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What do you?
Yeah, I just know about? It just kind of piqued my interest. I understand it kind of got beaten down with the software crash and some AI fears. I understand it's like a data. They have a lot of like data sets for long periods of time, and it kind of gives them a wide moat with the amount of data they have for various reasons, like insurance underwriting, law firms using their data for this and that. And it just seemed like it was at a decent price right now from the valuations I was researching. So I was just calling to get your opinion of it.
Yeah, I mean, the software enables professional researchers, legal teams, and businesses to make informed decisions and improve operational efficiency. And I think you kind of hit on the head there where they have a lot of data. And I think more and more AI is going to be very reliant on data sets that can't just be mined from the internet. So if they have that, then to me, that is a competitive advantage. I do generally like the software space right now, especially those that can bring unique data sets to their end user, where they can't, like you said, just go and subscribe to ChatGPT or Claude or whatever, and they'll be able to go find that data. So I like what you're looking at. The technicals, let me look at the technicals. The weekly is still, you know, certainly in a downtrend. It hasn't made a new low since February. That's a good thing. Yeah, so it's trying to gain a bit of momentum. Market cap is still about $60 billion. Let me look here. Yeah, I mean, earnings next year is supposed to be $2.09. The earnings for this year and next year are coming down, so that's a bit of a worry. But about a mid-teens multiple, I think I'm okay paying that. I like also that you're getting some foreign exposure. This is out of the UK. So I'm actually going to give this one a thumbs up from a risk-reward standpoint. Understand that it is pretty high risk because there's still a lot of market positioning around whether or not these type of businesses are going to be disrupted. So if you feel confident that it won't, then I do think this is a good risk versus reward at these levels.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now, my focus point concerns how to protect your portfolio from inflation's second wave. This is something that happened in the 70s. You had the initial inflation wave of the early 70s, and then it accelerated into the late 70s and into early 80s. And then you had, who's the Fed president? Why am I blanking on it now? Volcker. There we go. Volcker. Volcker raised rates dramatically, and that pushed inflation down. And then we went through a long period of kind of disinflation, really driven by industrialization of Japan and then China and all of that. But nonetheless, we are in a very similar era, and there are some similarities and differences to what we saw in 2022 versus today. Similarities. War. 2022 is Russia and Ukraine war. And obviously the post-pandemic supply chain disruptions that kind of persisted for a couple of years. Today, it's Middle East tension, Middle East war. Still the Russia-Ukraine war. It's not quite as, say, intense as it was, or at least it isn't in the headlines. But the supply chains are largely moving. It's more energy specific, commodity and chemical specific type of bottlenecks versus broad supply chain disruptions. So that makes this resurgence in inflation a bit more muted because it isn't as broad based. One difference is rates were near zero. So it gave the Fed a lot of leeway to raise rates to bring inflation down, to drain liquidity. I think right now you already have relatively elevated interest rates, even though they cut rates last year, probably a mistake. But that means there's less room for them to raise rates. Then you got on top of that, the deficit that remains very large, and our debt, we know, remains very large. So it's going to be very difficult for, I think, the Fed to really combat this inflation surge. So in my mind, actually, this is likely to be a lower level of inflation than we saw at peak in 2022 when it was, you know, 8-9%, depending on what measure you're looking at. But to me, it's probably going to be more persistent, meaning 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6% for a longer period of time, because especially with Kevin Warsh, somebody who was appointed by President Trump, that, you know, President Trump wants lower rates, he's going to be more hesitant to raise rates. And if he does, it'll probably won't be at the pace that we saw in 2022. So overall, supply chains are broadly functioning, but there are targeted choke points versus in 2022, it was broadly broken supply chain. Now, how does this manifest in portfolios, or how should you think about your portfolio in context? Because the end result very well could be similar, but probably not to the same magnitude. Number one is longer duration bonds remain a big risk. We saw the 30-year Treasury drop considerably from early, call late 2021 into late 2022. So for about a year, there was a really, really intense broad-based sell-off. And that could certainly happen again. So when you're thinking about bond exposure, you want to make sure that you have low duration risk, but you probably want to take some credit risk. Maybe not extreme credit risk, but some credit risk, especially in the public credit markets. But remember, TLT went from a high of $179. And TLT, for everyone out there, that's the 30-year Treasury bond ETF. So this is low yielding, very long duration, the probably one of the riskiest duration trades you can make by owning TLT. And it peaked in actually March of 2020. It had a lower high in December of 2021. So that's really when things started to change in earnest, to be honest. That's when you had the waterfall through Q1 and Q2, where TLT went from about 155 in December, and by the fall of 2022, it was all the way down to a low of 91, which that's over 30% drop for something that's supposed to be safe. These are treasuries. And really, ever since, TLT has been just grinding a bit lower. Now we're at 84. So it just shows you do not want to be owning longer duration assets. And speaking of long duration assets, usually high growth, loss making companies, they tend to suffer. That's why you saw all of the ARK funds do terribly in 2022. And NASDAQ was down 33% in that time. What's saving the market right now is, or at least that area of the market, is really AI data structure build out that's pushing earnings higher in the short term, but draining the balance sheets and the cash flows of the major Mag 7 names. Without that, if you continue to see rates rise, you're likely to see higher quality names with better balance sheets, consistent earnings and cash flows that are being recycled as stock buybacks and dividends, and companies with competitive durable advantages, those are the ones that are going to weather higher rate environments and higher inflationary environments. And then keep your cash rates elevated in high yield savings account, short-term treasuries, that offer attractive yields, especially if rates are going to probably stay higher. But you want to be ready when there is a significant sell-off, maybe due to the draining of liquidity from a Kevin Warsh, for example, where you can pick up assets. Before the market or the government comes in and tries to stimulate, which they will. We know they will. Then we talked at the top of the show how CPI fell a little bit, first time in years, month over month. We know it's likely to be short-lived. Because now we're seeing, as the war kind of reignited over the past week, freight costs, shipping costs are going up. So future inflation readings are likely to surprise the upside, because these higher shipping costs, these higher energy costs are now starting to feed into core goods that are on the shelf. And then what are the best type of inflation hedges? We know from a sector perspective, there are about three or four sectors on the equity side that tend to do well in an inflationary environment. You're talking REITs, you're talking materials, energy, and actually financials. Why? Because rates go up, they can lend at higher rates, their net interest margins tend to go up. You actually saw that with JP Morgan today in their earnings. Those are the four sectors that tend to do well in an inflationary environment. The ones that don't do well, typically. Technology, because they're growthier names. Consumer staples. Utilities, because they tend to be bond proxies. Same with consumer staples. They also have input costs that go up from workers to shipping costs, etc. And then healthcare, also kind of bond proxies. So you want to own commodities in general or be overweight them, as well as potentially tips if you're investing in bonds. That's where you want to be, at least safe bonds. You want to be in tips versus just straight up treasuries. Now the InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes, so your finance and investment questions keep coming. This next one came in earlier from a listener in New York.
Hi there, Duncan Forbes from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I'm calling about stock ticker COST, Costco. I'm looking into getting an entry point for this for a couple of reasons. One, and you can just give me feedback if this methodology makes sense. But with everything changing with the cycle of AI chips, I'm looking to get into consumer staples. Two, looking at the technicals, it is dropping like a falling knife. It passed by its 50, 100, and 200-day moving average. So I know that it was priced for perfection. From my reading of technical analysis, I was thinking between 844 to 877 to enter this stock, but I would like your technical analysis on when to get in, even if that methodology makes sense. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, looking at Costco, I don't think I need to tell everybody what Costco does. It's a name that we used to own for clients, but we sold it somewhere around $1,000 per share. Now we're at $921. It's certainly been struggling kind of over the past year. Not because the business struggled. This is a good example of what I say with a rising interest rate environment, higher inflation. These type of businesses tend to be revalued lower. Multiples contract. Like I said, it's not the business. Because this year, the earnings supposed to be up 13%, then another 10% next year to an all-time high of $22.68. However, still trading at $921. So even based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking a mid-40s multiple for a retailer? Doesn't make sense. And once again, we like the business. We like the company. We bought it a long time ago. We did very well, but the valuations just got out of hand. Enterprise value EBIT is 28, which is on the high side, especially for a name that doesn't have a lot of growth. Last quarter, revenue growth and earnings growth were 9%. I'm sorry. Earnings growth was 12. Revenue growth was 7. That was last quarter. No, that's estimate. Let me go. There we go. Yeah, this upcoming quarter must be 10 and 12. Okay, so it's decent. Now, it does have good cash flow. It's a great balance sheet. It's buying back shares. But once again, it's just too expensive. So, where's that buy point? $671. Now, I do think that 750 is a good support level, but I think the screaming buy is $671. That would bring it back into a reasonable multiple. I'll pay the mid to high 20s from an earnings perspective, but not 45. I'm sorry, not for Costco. Thank you for the question, the call. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal. Each and every week, they just help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. Sketch questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was calling to get your opinion on a stock I'm looking at. It's the Altera Group. The symbol is MO. And I wanted to see what would be a good entry point on this. I'm interested in the dividend. Should I wait for a pullback or just you think it'd be good to get in now? I'm also comparing the stock to Philip Morris. The symbol there is PM. What would you think would be the better income for dividend? I will be listening to the answer on your podcast. Thanks again for your program.
All right. Thank you for the call. This is a great question. I love this question because it's the perfect example of when investors make the mistake that when they only focus on the yield, the dividend yield. We own Philip Morris for clients. And that's PM, okay? That's Philip Morris International. Think of the Philip Morris brand outside of the U.S. Altria is the Philip Morris brands inside the U.S., as well as, you know, other businesses as well. Philip Morris International, though, they are the leader kind of globally in smokeless tobacco alternatives. Now, their yield is, dividend yield on Philip Morris, Altria Group is, 6%. For Philip Morris, it is 3.3. So the average person is going to say, well, I want the yield. I want Altria. I want 6%. But then you go and look at the returns. Trailing total returns. It includes dividends. It includes dividends, okay? Over the last 3 years, Philip Morris' total return is 25% annually. Altria is 21.9, despite the better dividend yield. Over the last 5 years, Altria, 13.5%. Philip Morris International, 16.17%. Over 2.5% annualized better returns per year over the last 5 years. Go back 10 years. Philip Morris International, 8.3 versus 4.3 for Altria Group. Nearly double the return over the last 10 years. But it goes to show you, it's not just about the dividend. It's about the quality of the business and the earnings growth. Altria's earnings supposed to be up 5% this year and 3% next year. Philip Morris, 11% this year, 9% next year. You're getting a better business with Philip Morris. That's why we own it. That's why we own it over Altria Group. So if you want the dividend share, go for it. If you want better returns, Philip Morris. Lastly, let's talk about rare earths and domestic industrial supply chains. This is a big factor in whether or not investing in rare earths is going to be a good investment over the long term. And it's about developing the industrial supply chain here in the United States. It's not about one-off projects. It's about an industrial ecosystem that needs to be built up. It's not just about mining of both rare earths and traditional materials, but it's about processing those materials, creating metals and alloys, getting financing and permits and logistics, workforce development. All of this is what is needed to really reshore manufacturing in a sustainable way, as well as get the that will create the contracts for more development on the mining side, from rare earths, like I said, to traditional industrial materials like copper, like zinc, like nickel, etc. This is what China's done. This is how you compete with China. They have an integrated industrial model. And if that's what we are, if you want to see manufacturing resurge in the United States, that's what you're going to need to see. So when you're thinking about investing in any stocks and relating to onshoring and manufacturing, this is how you need to think about the long-term growth of the industry. I'm Justin Klein, reminding you of KPP Financial's parallel investing. We make a trade for our clients, make the same trade for ourselves, same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatments. We invest right alongside our clients. We share the same risk and potential for success. And you can learn more over at investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.